We'll move straight into the next question there in lesson six. We had gotten up to the point of Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember, Abraham had made his plea for God to spare the city. If I could find 50 righteous, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. Likely having in mind Lot and his family as he went down to 10. Surely he thought we could find that many. It wasn't. And a lot of this morning will be a rehash of Thomas's lesson the other night. He did a great job going over Sodom and Gomorrah and for us. So some of that will be repeats. So remember the four cities that we're talking about, Jeremiah, or rather in Deuteronomy, we see Admah and Zeboam added to Sodom and Gomorrah. So those are likely the cities of the plains that it refers to. So the two angels, remember the three visitors, that had come to Abraham, one of them being the Lord, and then now the two angels that had gone on as he made his plea to the Lord there at the end of the chapter, have now arrived in Sodom with the intent to spend the night in the city. And what's Lot's response to that? Yeah, that insistence comes through pretty clearly in the narrative. I think Lot knew exactly what would be in store had they remained out in the open there in the city. So he implores with them, no, come into my house. And then the events that transpired immediately after that is that first question. So what happened after they went into the house? The doors closed. What is the next thing we're told? Yeah, know them definitely carnally being the implication there. There were no wholesome intent. No, there was no wholesome intent there in what they wanted to do. Lot, of course, shuts the door, goes outside, pleads with them. You know, men, do not do this. The extent of the indication given, the extent of the evil within the city, it talks about men from every quarter, young and old, as Sam mentioned. So it was certainly widespread, the sin of the city. The angels then would pull Lot back in, strike the men blind, and another indication of the extent of the evil. It says they wearied themselves trying to find their way in after he had struck them blind. So they were certainly in. What in there in verse 8, what's the offer that Lot makes? What's that? His daughters. That one's always been strange to me. I mean, I know it's a different culture. Women were thought of very differently. The relationships between men and women were very different at the time. But still, this one strikes me as, or has always struck me as very odd, a response of a father. You know, there are different reasons people give. Maybe he knew the intent of the men was homosexually, with no exception. He didn't worry about his daughters. He knew they would refuse that. The offer there, or at least what he says, gives the indication that because he had taken these men in and he was their host, he was responsible for them, being part of the reason that he would. But he was under, they were under his protection. And then I especially appreciated Thomas pointing out the response of the men of the city after he begs them not to make this or do this evil. What's their response? Thomas, you want to? Exactly, yes. Don't judge me. Very, as Kevin points out from time to time, there's nothing new under the sun. There, even back then, that cry from the evil, from the wicked, rings forth, and certainly is the cry today as those who would not want to be held accountable for any action they take. So we'll kind of flip-flop the next couple of questions. Take number 7 next. Who was allowed to escape the city before it was destroyed? So the instruction from the angels to Lot was find whoever you have in the city, whether it's son-in-laws, daughters, family, whatever, and get them out. Because, and you know, the indication as it goes through that narrative is this is the straw that's broke the camel's back. You know, in the previous chapter, it talked about God was going to go down and investigate whether the evil was as bad as the cry that had come up to heaven. With this progression of events, immediately the angels say, okay, this is what we've come for. So get your family and get out. And then how do the son-in-laws react when he comes to tell them? Yeah, thought he was jesting, joking. They refused to listen to him. And then, of course, the ones that were allowed to escape was Lot and his wife. And two daughters. We don't know if he had any more daughters or not. Perhaps that was the 10 that Abraham had thought of. Maybe there were more daughters that did not escape. We're not told that, but at least the two daughters and his wife and himself. Of course, the next morning, as the narrative goes, Lot, there's some degree of hesitation there. He's not willing to leave. Perhaps he's hanging. Obviously, he has some affinity for the city because he stayed there all these years, even with some of the descriptions that we'll see in a bit of his feelings there as he lived there. But for whatever reason, there was some attachment there, and he hesitated to leave, and the angels took his hand and demanded he leave. Where did he want to go? What plea did he make? They told him to go to the mountains, not stay in the valley or on the plain, because not survive. Zoar, yeah. Let me flee to this little town, little hamlet, I'm sure. Boy, he describes it, so the picture I get. Very small place, let me go there, or else we would die. Obviously, more accustomed to the city life than living in the mountains. And they agree to that and told him to get there immediately because they can't do anything until he arrives. Then, of course, what happened to his wife? Yeah, lost her life. Turned into a pillar of salt is the description given. Don't know what that means exactly, but for whatever reason, she did look back. Since Jesus used it to describe or to warn of those that would not want to, or warning of the destruction that was to come on Jerusalem, to me the idea is she looked back longingly, regretting having to leave, not wanting to leave things behind was the reason. Perhaps it was just because she was disobedient. Don't know that for sure. Yep. I think the New American Standard says, describes the son-in-laws as those who were to marry his daughter. What's that? Okay, so the ESV and the New American Standard both say the sons-in-laws who were to marry the daughters. Is that the New King James? King James. It doesn't? Okay. So, okay. Yeah, I didn't go and look at those other versions, but that is. So yeah, possibly there were more daughters. I certainly wouldn't argue with that possibility. All right, so yeah, just a short description of what transpired there in the chapter with the destruction. Immediately then, or that day, says the sun had risen over the earth when Lot came into Zoar, and the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from heaven, and he overthrew those cities in the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. So the destruction was, of course, complete. It was thorough. Abraham went out to look and looked down over the plain, and you remember the description of when he had looked at it, when Lot chose that valley. It was described compared to the Garden of Eden. It was so beautiful, and now all he saw was scorched earth and the smoke rising. So very much a complete destruction. So how is Lot described in 2 Peter chapter 2? And what's the reason given? Described as righteous. You know, we say a lot of things about Lot, but we got to keep that one in the back of our head, that God did describe him, the inspired writer did describe him as righteous. And why was he described, or what was the result of his righteousness? Yeah, and we can see that in the plea he makes for these visitors. I mean, maybe during that time he was trying his best to change the ways of those around him. What version is that? New King James says keeps acting as a judge. Yeah. Would like to go back and look at several versions of that. Thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, so I think it probably was, you know, a habit. Those he came in contact with, he would have, as a righteous man, he would have at least tried. So that's the lesson for us today. Go ahead, Marshall. Very much so. We'll see part of the influence here at the end of the chapter. I mean, it's obvious the effects that it had. So the lesson for us today, in the drumbeat of acceptance that we see ourselves faced with daily, we need to keep that mindset. Be careful, because the influence will affect us, whether it's just a dulling of the senses. It may not be active participation. It may not be a hearty acceptance, but just that dulling of the senses in this world of evil and wickedness. We'll talk about that in the lessons that we can take from it, but we can learn from it. So applications, the lessons for us. First is God's judgment on the wicked, of course. That's obvious. Isaiah, the other prophets, talk about the use Sodom and Gomorrah as examples on the impending judgments on many nations, Israel, Edom, and Babylon, and those three passages that I've got listed there. Jeremiah 23 and verse 14, it's used in talking about the false prophets that were even in Israel. It says, they strengthen the hands of evildoers so that no one is turned back from his wickedness. All of them have become to me like Sodom and her inhabitants like Gomorrah, and through Isaiah or Jeremiah. It should remain very much the same lesson for us today. 2 Peter in chapter 2, talking about condemning. If God was doing that then, that judgment will stand just as much today on those, it says, who indulge the flesh in its corrupt desires and despise authority. Those things, Jude, now I desire to remind you that those that you know all things once for all, that the Lord, after saving a people out of the land of Egypt, subsequently destroyed those who did not believe, and angels who did not keep their domain, but abandoned their proper abode. He has kept in eternal bonds of under darkness for the judgment of the great day, just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, since they are in the same way as these, indulged in gross immorality and went after strange flesh, speaking to Greg's point, are exhibited as examples of undergoing the punishment of eternal. So certainly, God's judgment is just as much a statement for us as it was for them. It may not happen while this earth stands. It is just as sure. Yes. Kevin? Yes, that is the beginning. It is one of God's statements on homosexuality, I have no doubt. As Greg said, there is no plainer words he could have used. That's what this account is about. That's the central focus of the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah, is the carnality and the homosexuality that's exhibited there. That was the final straw, as the angels made their determination that the time for judgment had come. We see very similar stories, Judges 19, and the Levite, and the city of Gibeah, and the homosexual practices there, the death of his concubine as a result, being a reason. So, another passage that would say the same thing, Leviticus 20, Brad will be covering the law. It was a capital offense in the law. So obviously we can see from that God's feelings on it. Romans 1:26, of course, we just studied Romans. It calls it unnatural. It's against nature. Yes, that's the point of those three passages. Sodom and Gomorrah tells us it was wrong before the law. Leviticus says it was wrong in the law. Romans says it's still wrong. That's the point. That is God's judgment. It was never intended to be. It is wholly unnatural. It's against nature itself. God could be no plainer.
That's far back.
Man was created for woman. And the final lesson I had from it, God knows the righteous. God sees his people no matter what. Even amongst that evil, God could pick out his righteous. In 1929, he says that because of Abraham, Lot was spared. So in deference to Abraham's righteousness, those in his family were allowed to escape. Lot, of course, described as righteous and allowed to escape. I think being the idea there, think of Elijah, the throes of depression he found himself in as he fled from Jezebel, and God said, there are still 7,000. So God knows those who are his own. Paul would look beyond the here and now in 2 Timothy chapter 4. He said, while no one stood with him at his first defense, he knew that the Lord would rescue him from every evil deed and bring him safely to his heavenly kingdom. And then there in Revelation 3, the church of Philadelphia, in the letters to the churches, Jesus said, because you have kept the word of my perseverance, I also will keep you from the hour of testing. So at least some indication there that he would at least mitigate the suffering, the physical suffering there. But the ultimate promise there, he who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. So God certainly knows who his own, whether it's physically or whether in eternity. Any other lessons you might want to take, Trevor? Yeah, when we see 8 souls on the ark, 4 souls here, God can, the numbers don't matter. Somebody.
When he says.
Yeah, the ultimate escape from righteousness. Anything else, Mike? Yeah, I mean, the earth was a clean slate after the flood, and so yeah, God's grace is. Anyone else? All right, we'll move on down then. Maybe Lot started to learn his lesson after spending a little time in Zoar and decided don't need to be here either. Somehow he ends up in the mountains dwelling in a cave at the end of the chapter there. Beginning in verse 30, the next account of Lot, the last account of Lot. What transpired there with his daughters? What was the plot or the scheme that they hatched? What was their fear to begin with, and then the plot that they hatched? Yeah, they were afraid that they wouldn't be able to repopulate the earth. In their isolation, no man is around for us, Kevin. Right. Yeah, we had that discussion the other night about the trip. Wherever Zoar was located, wherever Sodom and Gomorrah was, you know, it wouldn't have been a leisurely walk. It would have been pretty hasty, the escape. So, yeah, that very thing in Zoar, it wouldn't have taken too many people bent on evil to decide, okay, this is not a good place to be either. So the Lord has allowed me grace. Maybe it's time to leave. But anyway, he ends up in the mountains, dwelling in the caves. The daughters are afraid. Our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of men. So they were afraid they would not be able to carry on the family lineage. What's their answer? Maybe stemming from the influences they had been brought up in. Yeah. So they get Lot drunk. So drunk, it says, that he didn't even realize when the older daughter came in or when she got up. Same thing then repeated the next evening. Getting him drunk again. Very much to me an indication of what they had been brought out of. A couple of statements that I found. Hamilton points out the irony of the incident. It said, earlier the father was willing to use his daughters for sexual purposes without their consent. Now they will use their father for the same. Leupold would describe it a scheme worthy of the Sodomites. So yeah, you can see that fateful decision that Lot made as he chose the valley of the Jordan over the promised land way back, and the effects it has had. He's lost his wife and evidently the morality of his daughters. So what were the two nations that would spring from this account? Yeah, Moab and Ammon. Even the names reflect incest. Recorded in the incident, Moab means from the father, Ben-Ami, son of my kinsman, and Moab and Ammon, of course, who would play roles in Israel's future, come into frequent contact. Numbers 25 records the harlotry of the daughters of Moab and that plague that accompanied that as the men joined themselves to Baal Peor. 24,000 were killed there until Phinehas, of course, stepped in and stopped the plague. One of the most heinous gods of the idolatry that would plague Israel was Molech. It's mentioned time and again, and he was the chief deity of the Ammonites later. Even Solomon, 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 7, Solomon would erect high places for his foreign wives. It says he built the high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon. He did so for his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. So, as Kidner put it, so much would stem from a self-regarding choice and the persistence in it. I thought that was a good fitting way to end the account of Lot and thinking back to that decision to remove himself from the promised land. Two nights in a row, humanity is puzzling at we look at these figures and think, well, you know, how could they? Well, the evidence is that we have and the sin we find ourselves entangled. We have no more excuse for. One last note, talking about Moab and Ammon, who was a Moabite that would be in the lineage of Jesus? Ruth. Yeah. Just, you see God working through man's failures in the whole story of Genesis. I'm always amazed when you find one little connection like that and you think God is still working his plan through all of it. That was a 5-minute bell, wasn't it? All right. We'll finish out lesson 6 there. The familiar half-truth that Abraham, and you know, this is, it's almost like this was just a running thing. We're just going to do it this way and we're not going to change. What was the half-truth that he told when he came into contact with Abimelech of Gerar? She's my sister. How did they, speaking to Tony's point, how did they not have the conversation after they left Egypt? And he almost lost her to Pharaoh, and had God not stepped in and had grace and got him out of that situation, he would have lost her there. Certainly was never going to. Had they not had that conversation, let's do this differently next time. But they don't. They don't learn the lesson. Lance and I were talking Wednesday evening after services, and whatever length of time, what was the plague that brought that God brought on Abimelech here in this instance that caused him to bring? He said. He said he closed the womb. So, you know, there was at least some amount of time had passed. It couldn't have been too long because of the account in the next chapter if this is chronological, but it wasn't like a day or two. It was evidently enough time for him to recognize, and of course God appeared to him in a dream, but they knew the plague that was coming from it was they were not being able, God had stopped the wombs of the women there. So think about Abraham's reaction during whatever length of time that was and what he must have been going through his head, you know. What have we done again? So, obviously, he's still a work in progress at this point. His faith still isn't what it used to, what it should be, as we noted in the first thing. His reasoning there, as when Abimelech confronted him, he said, I thought there was no fear of God in this place. Well, obviously, there was at least some degree, because when God appeared to Abimelech, he immediately confronted Abraham. He pled his case. Look, I'm innocent. This man told me she was his sister. I just thought that was ironic that Abraham would use that reasoning, but it wasn't wholly on or wholly accurate. Kevin? Yeah. Yeah, I think of no fear of God in this place, and I think of Pharaoh, men like that. Certainly Abimelech doesn't come across to me that way. We won't mention it. There's no questions in the next lesson at the end of chapter 21. I think it is. Abimelech comes up again and looking to make a covenant with Abraham as this very wealthy chieftain in his land. Just another account that shows the day-to-day actions of what was going on, the business dealings. Gerar is in the edge of the Philistine land. Go ahead, Marshall. I read that, and I meant to write it down. I'm glad you brought that out. That is God preserving the purity of that line, and there would be no question as to whose child it was. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and he granted him that grace, and it was. All right, we don't have time to go into the next lesson. We'll just begin the next class. We'll try to get through all the lesson, and that's a tall order, I know, because it's got one of the greatest stories of faith in the Bible. But we'll try to get through that lesson on Wednesday night and move forward from here. Thank you all for your comments. Okay.